Committee will come to order. We'll start with the calling of the roll.
Chairman Holmberg.
Here.
Senators Cook.
Here.
Heckman.
Here.
Wardner.
Here.
Representatives Delzer.
Here.
Ballou.
Here.
Carlson.
Here.
Henmark.
Here.
Mr. Chairman, we have a quorum.
Okay. Next is consideration of the minutes of the August 15th meeting. We have a motion by Representative Mock, seconded by Senator Wardner. Discussion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion carried. We're going to go a little slow until the paper copies come down here. I don't have a lot of comments. This is our second meeting and our last meeting. And I'm going to now call on Alan to make some preliminary comments about the presentation that you're going to hear today or see today.
Right, thank you, Mr. Chairman. IHS is here to present their initial revenue outlook. As you know, we contracted with them in December. They got started in January. So they've been working at this for only 6 months now. So they're learning as they go. There's a lot to learn about our economy and the forecasting process in North Dakota. We provide them substantial amounts of information, historical data, on tax collections, our tax structure, all those kind of things. This is an independent view of the North Dakota economy and the revenue projection process. We have not provided them any information that Moody's would have provided or any of OMB's revenue numbers.
The following participant has entered the conference.
So,
no names are available.
So again, like I said, this is an independent forecast. It's not a Legislative Council staff forecast. Like I said, we just provide them the information. We did see a draft report late last week. We did provide some comments on that to them about potential concerns or issues or questions that might come up, just to make them aware to be prepared more for today. So we did provide that to them. It's not a legislative forecast. It's really a tool for you to use as you do develop the legislative forecast during the session. You'll have the OMB forecast and then the IHS forecast, and hopefully those will kind of align and make your job easier, but it just provides you another tool to use as you develop the legislative forecast. So I just wanted to make those comments, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, are there any questions of Alan? Okay, then we will go to the main feature of this morning, presentation by IHS regarding report on forecasting results.
Thank you all. It's a pleasure to be here. Let me get this started. The presentation was up here. It seems to be missing now.
Yeah, I think our IT guys deleted it.
So I'll be speaking, broadcasting the presentation you now have in front of you.
Is it okay to do it from the PDA? Or do you need the other one?
We're good. Thank you, Adam. As I said, it's a pleasure to be here to present what is our first forecast of tax revenues for North Dakota. We have, as Alan mentioned...
Excuse me. Make sure you state your name for the record.
Forgot.
Jim Diffley, Executive Director, IHS Market. So as Alan pointed out, we've engaged all year with Adam and Alan and their teams to understand the state and its revenue sources, and we appreciate their excellent guidance. Also, recently in August, we convened an all-day session with local economy and revenue experts to receive their insights, which were excellent, and have guided our subsequent work. Now, tax revenue forecasting has been a large part of my career for 30 years. first in the New Jersey Treasury Department for 10 years, and then as a significant part of my work, 20-plus years experience at IHS, first as a regional economist and then as a consultant. I know well that the volatility of tax receipts exceeds that of most economic variables. And you should know that the volatility in North Dakota, of North Dakota revenues exceeds that in other states by substantially. Forecasting these is treacherous as the future is uncertain. The Bakken boom here was and is a blessing for the state, I think unambiguously. But boy, does it heighten that uncertainty as global oil markets, subject to numerous political and economic factors, have driven a roller coaster experience this decade in terms of the North Dakota economy and hence your tax revenues. So we'll do our best in forecasting, but we also provide, I'll point out, a capability with economic models and tax revenue models to quickly adapt to what may be, you might say surely will be, new developments over the coming months in the oil market, if not the general economy. So turning to the forecast slides. There we go. The biennium forecast as we see it now, the middle column, 2017 to 2019, is our forecast as derived by our models, which we'll discuss in a second, for the four major taxes. Sales and use tax, $1.704 billion in current biennium, and then growing by 5.9% to $1.805 billion in the next. Motor vehicle excise tax, up 6.4%. I guess I should point out, the first column is the deviation from the current forecast. I do not know the source of the current forecast. Is that the forecast that was adopted by the legislature? Okay. So the deviations from the current forecast are just 0.8%. That's rather astounding, I think, for the income, for the sales and use tax, 6.4% for the excise tax, 12.2% for the individual income tax, and 11.7% for the corporate income tax. In all the latter three cases, those are higher than the current forecast, as the economy, I presume, rebounded in a way that had not been anticipated when that first forecast was made. But again, I can't speak to that first forecast. Going to the 2021 biennium, you looked for additional 6% increases in sales and use tax, 5.9% to $1.805 billion. 9.1% increase in motor vehicle excise tax, 7.3% in individual income tax, and these are two-year growth rates, of course, and 4.2% in the corporate income tax. The relatively strong performance, and the slide's not quite showing completely here, maybe it is for you, the relatively strong performance is as the state economy, having turned around in late 2017, early 2018, regains in our economic forecast its 2014 peak in terms of gross state product in nominal terms, with 6.1% growth projected for 2019. That's the economic forecast. After that, growth slows in our economic forecast to more, you might say, normal rate. Now, we will be tracking this forecast over the coming months to calibrate and adjust our model if necessary.
The following participant has entered the conference.
Indeed, we've left our forecast, out our forecast for the two large oil taxes, all right, given the uncertainty there, and we'll have more discussions with Adam and Alan's team on that, and the other smaller taxes, which we'll also provide a forecast for to complete the revenue forecasts. These forecasts are derived from our economic forecasts as the by the particular drivers, particular economic drivers, found to be most relevant and reliable in a statistical sense for prediction. Those drivers incorporate the other factors in the economy. So they don't ignore, when we go to the slide that shows the drivers, they're not ignoring other factors, rather they're also correlated with the other factors that join into importance in projecting the rate of growth or decline, as the case may be, in the particular tax revenue sources. We forecast on a quarterly basis. That's the way most economic variables are tabulated. So we take your tax revenues by item by month, compile them into quarters, right? Make a quarterly forecast, and then group the quarters for an annual or fiscal year, and then biennium compilation. Okay. And all this, with this preliminary forecast, leads to what we hope will be, what will be essentially a final forecast in January, as we track again how the model projects, how the economy changes over the coming months, and then leading to some further adjustments, I suppose, in March, given your budget cycle.
Yes. Representative Mock.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I'm looking at your chart here in the 2019-21 biennium forecast, and I don't know if Alan or Adam have the information that was presented, I believe, at Government Finance last week, but are you including any of the changes that would have been of our income or corporate income, personal or corporate income taxes, that any of those changes from the federal tax reform?
Yeah, let me, the answer is yes, but we'll come to that. I was going
okay.
to discuss that. We'll
so, and then
break
if I may then, so that, thank you for doing that. And then how about the full implementation of the single sales factor calculations of corporate income tax?
Same thing, let's
okay.
make sure the corporate
All
tax
right, thank you.
I'll do that. And there's some uncertainty surrounding those, as you know, no doubt. Okay. I'm also thinking the next slide breaks out the biennium into the individual fiscal years, which is, for most of the country, you're not the only state with biennium forecast by any stretch, are a more natural way to look at things, and we can understand the growth rates a little better, et cetera. So we have the four main sources, sales, motor vehicle, individual, and corporate income taxes lined up there. You can see the turnaround in the third and fourth columns between fiscal 2017 and fiscal 2018 just completed, with sales tax up 4.6%, motor vehicle excise tax down 1%. By the way, motor vehicle sales in the U.S. peaked in 2017 and have been coming down gradually since. A lot of incentives were put in place during the 2014, 15, 16 year, and cars are very long-lived, as you know, so the implication is a couple of slow years of growth in motor vehicles. The individual income tax, which was down double digits in fiscal 2017, is up double digits, 16.5% in fiscal 2018. Corporate income, similarly, down almost 30%, up over 30% in fiscal 18. Then going out to the forecast, the real forecast for fiscal year 2019, July through June, we've got 5% for sales and use. That's an important year. We're going to talk about what's driving that high rate of 5%, 5.5%, and then the next biennium, 2.1%. That's the more normal rate of growth associated with what we think of as a normalization of economic growth in the state, again, deriving from the most recent oil boom. Motor vehicle excise taxes, 6.5%, bouncing back strongly this in 2019. Largely because of, or at least in part because of, activity out in the oil drilling areas, as happened in the last boom, 2014, 2015, then slowing gradually to 2.7% by 2021. Individual income tax, strong, 5.3% 2019, then slowing 3.3%, 2.5%. And corporate income tax is very difficult to forecast, given the structure of U.S. profits and obviously, same applies to North Dakota corporations, growing at slightly less than 2% out through the horizon. Okay. Now, the next slide describes in a bit our model for the four taxes. The model actually consists of more than four equations because we have additional equations. The two big components of the individual income tax, withholdings as opposed to the estimated payments by individuals on what is generally non-wage income. And we described the economic drivers, as I said, that we have found the most useful, most relevant in predicting the tax. But again, I want to emphasize, not that we're ignoring everything else, it's just that that driver, for instance, in sales and use tax, personal and consumption expenditures, incorporates what's going on in terms of incomes, both in service sector, agricultural incomes, et cetera. And so it compiles that information into an effective driver of the sales and use tax. The well additions, new well additions, are found to be, as has been emphasized to me from the statement very many times, a very important driver for the sales tax, as material and equipment, et cetera, is spent at a high rate. And that's going to be, as I'll mention soon, the key sort of uncertainty in the forecast, how many new Bakken wells will be drilled out in the near term. Motor vehicle excise tax, we do have a forecast for the state, an economic forecast of new passenger light truck registrations. That's the number of units, not the price. So obviously the price plays a role. We also see a role for the employment in the mining sector, as not surprising, as workers come in and work on, again, the new wells and other things. The individual tax, we do have an economic forecast for wages, and that's very useful. It's an important part of our economic model, so that directly translates into withholdings. We also have an economic forecast for property income, interest income, dividend income, rents. The tricky part of that side of the individual income tax that results in estimated payments that are volatile is capital gains, primarily from stock market transactions. And there, as you know, the stock market's had a very strong couple of years, and that's boosting revenues, to be sure. We don't expect, let's put it this way, it's not that we don't expect the stock market to keep gaining, but we don't expect capital gains to grow at the same rate that they would have, or they will have seen to be in the last couple of years. By the way, because capital gains are only reported when tax returns are filed, we don't really have visibility as to how high they were after 2016. And those 2016 data were just released by the IRS about 2 weeks ago. On the corporate tax, as I mentioned, corporate profits is itself a volatile variable. It's a volatile variable because it's the difference between revenues and costs. So you may have two very large numbers subtracting from each other, and small rates of growth in one or the other can lead to large rates of growth, large changes in the net subtraction of the two. So that's why it's fundamentally volatile. But we do have a forecast of it. And then we find the price of crude oil, price of oil sold out of North Dakota, the WTI, plays a huge role in that, in explaining the volatility and changes in the corporate tax. So let's look closely, and what we'll have is a slide like this for each of the major taxes. On the left-hand side.
Representative, yes. Delzer has a question.
Jim, say on the sales and use tax, you said something about new wells. A lot of it depends on new wells. What number of new wells did you use per month or whatever? Do you have that number?
I certainly do, 80.
How many? 80?
80, yes. Okay. It's right on the graph here. That's exactly the key point I was going to make.
All right, thank you.
So, and I'll go to that right now. So, the big issue here is that internally at IHS, and we're in contact with the oil companies and operators and drilling operators, and the desired number of additions, when we pull them, if you will, the desired number of additions in the Bakken fields come out to be about 50% higher than that, between 120 up to 150 per month, new wells per month. By the way, the graph in the lower right-hand quarter is the quarterly amount, so it's 80 times 3 or 240. That's why, if you're wondering what the numbers on the left-hand scale mean. The reports from the state, and including reports up through June, I believe we've seen, are significantly less than that. And the reason is that the labor force is not available to drill wells at that rate. And unlike the period in 2013, 2014, et cetera, when there was a large pool of unemployed workers, including in the sector, in the construction sector, mining sector generally, not only here, but across the country, right? That's no longer the case. We've got very low unemployment, not just in North Dakota, very low unemployment across the country. In fact, it's the lowest it's been in 30 years, I may have the time period, and going lower. It's under 4%. We're frankly surprised it got that low, you know? Not that we didn't think the economy could be that strong, but that we didn't think unemployment itself, because of labor force constraints, could get precisely that low. But it has. So, you know, I'm based in Philadelphia. When the Marcellus development occurred in western Pennsylvania and across Pennsylvania earlier in this decade, a nice leading indicator to me was the number of pickup trucks with Texas license plates I'd see when I was out there, right? It's a lot of in migration to the state to exploit that. Presumably, that source is not so readily available here as it was then. And so those are the reports we're getting, that labor supply constraints are limiting the construction to about 80. And the reason I have a flat line, we have a flat line in the forecast, is that we assume, it's a rough assumption, but we're getting it from local sources, that that's about the best that we can expect. That number, because of the very high tax revenue, particularly sales tax revenue that's generated with each new well drilled, is a very important factor in the sales tax forecast. If we were to use the notional desired level of new wells, about 50% higher, we'd have double-digit sales tax growth in this biennium. All right. And we have that. We'll consider that as a scenario as we go forward. This is one of the things when I mentioned we want to watch month to month for the rest of the year to see how this plays out, whether that number is able to be increased. I think actually in April, May, and June, it was less than 80. So in some sense, you might argue it's even a little bullish.
Representative Mock.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just so I understand this, you're looking at 80 wells drilled
right
per month.
New wells, right?
New wells. Are you including any fracking numbers in your models? Number of wells fracked?
We're not distinguishing between the two. We basically have, in our models, we have a variable for the number of new wells drilled and the amount of barrels extracted from all wells.
We might come back to that.
I will tell. Well, I would appreciate it if you would, because if there is a basic distinction to be made, we could use that information.
Mr. Chairman,
I may be missing something.
Yes, Senator Wardner.
When it comes, committee members and sir, when the wells are fracked, they're completed then, and that's when they can start producing. So there are wells that are drilled out there that are not completed. They're not fracked. So we have 950 wells drilled but not completed. And they're called drilled but uncompleted. They call them DUCs. So when you look at this, you got to look at when the number that are completed after
okay.
fracking. So and I think you've captured that.
Okay, very good.
Don't call it drilling. Call it
I was just going to say that's my inexperience in oil industry. I was using the words interchangeably. I believe the actual data series we have as well is completed. So fair point.
Representative Carlson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jim, I think if you look back at our history on the oil, is that we were very careful as to not create such a dependency on the success of oil in funding our general government, whereas I believe that the biggest effect it has on it is not in the general fund $400 million that we take, but in the sales and income tax. And that's why those factors are really crucial to us.
I agree.
And the fact that we are getting shut in because we could probably pump a lot more oil if we didn't have to deal with the flaring issue, right, and eventually be a transportation issue to get it out of the state. So we think that we need to be really cautious as we look at this, because we want them to keep drilling, but we do believe that there's a bottleneck coming at some point in time on the horizon that we need to keep in mind. And I think Senator Wardner would agree with that. He lives out in the West and is very active in that. So as we look at the forecast, I'm just really making sure we're cautious as we look at this, because the opportunity is there, but I think there's some bottlenecks that are going to slow us down that we need to understand in the marketplace.
I understand. And so we're viewing this forecast as a conservative forecast, recognizing those bottlenecks. I guess the question for you is the 80, which, you know, literally our models have to pick a number, right? The 80 is slightly above what we've seen in the second quarter, you know, April, May, June. The most recent data I have, I think, is in 60s, 70s. Do you recall, Adam? It's okay. But the point is, might we have seen a bottleneck that already that's more restrictive than even 80?
I have one more question, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
And I've always, as we've done our other forecasts, I've always been real concerned that we make sure that we do enough communication with the boots on the ground. And I want you to reassure me that in all these factors that you're in contact with all these various businesses and entities, because I think they have the best pulse of anybody. Even though the models work and they look good, I think it's really crucial to us. We've found our best success is having those people involved in all these industries and businesses telling us how things are really going.
Yeah, we have, and we started to do that with the meeting I referred to in my introduction, the all-day call. But one thing about that is that we also are tapping our experts in basically in Houston, is where our large energy group is mostly congregated, and they're giving us the information that they'd like to drill more, like to complete more wells. So we're trying to square those two. In our first, very optimistic forecast, which we developed about a week or two ago, we got some feedback that said, wait a minute, no, we can't do this. But that's where their forecasts are coming to. So they're going to square those.
Yes, Senator Wardner.
Jim and committee members, Representative Carlson is correct. One of the bottlenecks is pipeline capacity out of here. Mm-hmm. And that is filling up again. The Dakota Access Pipeline really gave us a shot in the arm. And the other one is the gas. The Department of Mineral Resources is continuing, or the Industrial Commission continues to put the squeeze on the flaring of gas. And it's going from 85, I think, to 88%. And there are some new things coming in. And so they're talking about sequestering that gas back into a formation down below so that the flaring thing will kind of go away.
Right.
I guess what I'm saying is one of the agencies you need to stay in contact is our regulatory one,
okay,
and that would be the Department of Mineral Resources, Lynn Helms. You can talk to Houston, but it's the Department of Mineral Resources that controls things around here. So that's one individual I would make sure that I had a hotline to.
Very good. Will do. Yeah, when I say Houston, it means that that's where our international energy views come from, and I think we not that we can trust them, we assume we can trust them on the price side, right, the world price of oil. But drilling in North Dakota is not something that they're more expert on than you. All right, each of these slides will have on the left-hand side the forecast by fiscal year. It's not quarterly. In this case, the sales and use tax, you can see the turnaround in fiscal 2018 and the continued growth upward. And then the two drivers, main drivers that we use in our economic model, in our tax revenue model for that, personal consumption expenditure, which is something that's measured by the U.S. Bureau of Economic Analysis based on its regional accounts. So we trust that number very well for the state itself. And then the Bakken well addition forecast, as I said, and the volatility I referred to in the opening that we're dealing with here is clearly demonstrated by that graph. So similarly, on the motor vehicle tax, to get this to come down. We have, again, a turnaround in fiscal 2018, again, with the economic cycle that North Dakota has experienced. And you'll see that we have a declining forecast. You go to the upper right-hand corner where the green line turns to gray. We have a declining forecast for the number of vehicles in line with that national trend that we have. But prices, remember, are going up. And we can give you the percentage changes there if you want. I guess we will in our full report. The other factor there is what's happening out in the oil fields. And there we have employment in our forecast going up somewhat modestly. I think that's in line with the labor force constraints. Hopefully, we're not too bullish on that side because that's one of the bottlenecks that we're talking about. But that also pushes a extra bit from the non-typical household demand for motor vehicles. Next is the individual income tax withholdings directly coming from wages. Again, turnaround in fiscal 2018, a rather dramatic and strong growth, initially leveling off. That slide doesn't show it so much in the withholdings forecast. The elasticity we use, it's similar to what the tax department has derived from tax return data, is about 1.1. That means owing to the progressivity of the income tax, a 1% increase in wages leads to a 1.1% increase in tax revenue owing to wage liability. So that's the assumption there. And that's coming directly from our economic forecast, which itself, by the way, our economic forecast, by the way, will also be revised as new economic data comes in the upcoming months. So by January, if we're as good as I think we are, we won't change the forecast very much, but we might, if it doesn't pan out as well or as bad as the second half of the year is currently forecasted by us. Estimated and final payments, I mentioned the role of stock market and capital gains. We did take the numbers from that the North Dakota Tax Department developed after the Tax Cut and Jobs Act at the federal level. And this also holds for the corporate income tax. And we've seen some of the results of that by the collections thus far in 2018 as to how much those Tax Act changes flowed through to the liability on state income taxes, in this case your income tax. It differed. It was basically the same across most states, but it differed by the particular state tax structure. So we did add those adjustments into, as we term them, add factors in our model results. So we had a model result that said property income and non-wage income is growing like this. That leads to tax liability going like this. But, we have to make these changes because in 2018 something new happens, right? And we have good estimates. I was very impressed with what the tax department did as early as, I think, December with their estimates, and they seem to have been borne out so far. So those are there. I think I didn't mention, by the way, speaking of that.
Representative Delzer.
Before you go to corporate, where do you put the royalties in the individual?
They're on the property income side.
It's on the property side? Okay.
Right. So they're generating estimated payments by those taxpayers, right? And so we think we have a good handle on that, although, again, to the extent that that's volatile with oil holdings, there's some uncertainty. I want to go back to the sales tax for a moment. The other big tax change this year was the Wayfair versus South Dakota on internet sales. We haven't added that. We think it's an addition, and I understand that North Dakota has already gotten some benefit from that and will be fully sort of implementing that in October. Our estimate, which is actually based on work in a couple of other states, is that it's about a 2% gain. And it depends slightly on how well you've been able to capture that revenue source. And I imagine North Dakota, because fewer firms have nexus in North Dakota than they do in the larger states, that you would be a little above 2% as to the impact. We have not added that here. That would be a one-time 2%, 2.3% increase in the sales tax. So we might put that in starting in October in the revised forecast. Okay, on the corporate tax, again, we looked at the Tax Cut and Jobs Act impact on corporations and incorporated some of the changes there that should flow through. Big uncertainty, first of all, the growth here you see from in the top right slide is from corporate profits growing fairly strongly. The single sales factor, the move to the single sales factor, is certainly a negative for the tax. We think it's already in the pipeline, if you will, of explaining the rate of decline in the last couple of years, the slower rate of increase in the last couple of years, however you look at it. But we're going to work with the staff to finalize that adjustment if there needs to be adjustment. Right now, that's one of the causes of relatively weak growth in the income tax, despite the relatively bullish profit side. And then we also see that oil prices themselves for that particular industry have a fundamental role. And we look for oil prices going up a little, I'll show in a second, and staying at a what has been, in recent terms, a relatively high level. Okay. Here, in fact, is the oil price outlook from our, as I call them, my friends in Houston. That's Brent on top, which they, for international reasons, focus on, I suppose, more, the green line and WTI on the bottom. Both you see going up from mid-2018, a few dollars. Brent is going up a few dollars more. I don't know why that is. That's not my expertise. Peaking in early 2019, but then staying near WTI, the $70 range. All right, now, as I mentioned in the beginning, oil markets are very volatile. We're concerned about decline in supply. Well, if you're worried about high oil prices, you're concerned about a decline in supply from Iran and further declines in Venezuela, North Dakota, and Alaska, the two states that are sort of in the opposite position. High oil prices are good. Right? But there's certainly something we're going to watch in the coming months. Here is our, I mentioned the 80 wells assumption. Here's our energy team's estimate of total barrels as barrels per day on the left-hand side. In the blue shade is the forecast. It's increased to almost 1.4 million. We expect it to go a little higher and then level off at about that rate. We don't have at this point a lot of direct pushback from the local people, so we'll be looking for that if there is any. Crude production in terms of barrel per day, well, there's a closer look at it on the right-hand side. I think we just blown up the slide there, sorry. We narrowed the focus there from slide 18 to September 21. So it's the same issue. I'd appreciate any comments on that, by the way, if you have any. As I tell my people back in Philadelphia and Washington, people in this room know more about North Dakota oil than I do.
Senator Boardner.
Just a comment. I think you're spot on the barrels per day.
Thank you.
Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, just so I understand, a lot of times when we've looked at these and we've talked to local oil experts, they use kind of a combination of the NYMEX and the West Texas Intermediate, and they look out into what futures are selling for. Just reiterate for me again how you do that so I understand if it lines up with those or not.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll get back to you with that because I don't do that myself. IHS has a big economics department, got a big energy department. I don't know the source of their methodology, but I'll get back to you. That's a good point, yeah.
Representative Belzer.
As a follow-up on that, you need to also do that on the price side for the discounts for transportation and whatever from WTI.
Right. I assume we do. Okay. Laura, I assume you're on the phone from Cambridge. Are you making these notes for me? I have to answer.
That's correct.
Thanks. Okay, more. So that's the revenue forecast as we see it now, and as we say, we'll be watching it in the upcoming months and working with Adam and Alan and the team. Let me reiterate our U.S. outlook here. Fiscal stimulus, that is the tax cuts, largely, plus some extra deficit spending enlarged in January. And it looks like they may be pushing through more tax cuts soon. We'll see about that. Are boosting economic growth now, right? At the cost of the deficit in the future, I just have to add parenthetically. But trade wars are a risk. You're all aware of the uncertainty with the president and reactions in China and elsewhere. So near-term growth is definitely buoyed by those tax cuts and spending increases. Financial conditions are good. Consumers and business sentiment are high. And we have strength in employment, low unemployment, incomes going up. The latest report you may have seen from Census is that household, even median household wealth, household income, went up again this year after a very poor performance in the early part of the decade. We've now had three straight years in median household income growth. So the gains, income gains, are filtering down a little more to the bottom half of the income distribution than they had been. So we have real GDP growth expected 2.9% in 2018, 2.7% next year. We have the unemployment rate actually going down to 3.4%, but that fuels inflation. Fed has to tighten and will tighten, and plus there's capacity constraints. You can't grow any very fast, can't add new workers with unemployment at that rate. So economic growth subsides to 2% and even less in 2021, because not only is unemployment getting low and labor force getting tight for that reason, but labor force growth is very, very slow, right? We're an aging population. Baby boomers such as me are to retire soon. Immigration is lower. We do have some Generation X, Generation Y moves, but overall the labor force is on a downward trend in terms of growth rates. And that's a constraint on long-term growth. So in addition to this, we're prepared to, as I mentioned, the capability of adjusting the economic or adapting to different economic forecasts. So we provided some optimistic and pessimistic scenarios around this baseline. There's any number of parameters you can think are important and size of, but what we've done in each of these cases, and the four graphs are for each of the four taxes mentioned. The gray line is the impact of a $10 higher oil price than our baseline forecast. Okay, so instead of going up WTI going up to 70 in 2019, it goes to 80. And the green, is that a blue line? The blue line, the bottom line in each case is the implication of $10 lower. So instead of a WTI at 70, a WTI at 60. So that's the range that our models are showing in terms of the level of revenues dependent upon a $10 swing in oil prices. And we can obviously run scenarios with larger swings or smaller swings, if you like. Let's see what the numbers show on the last slide. Here, by biennium, the sales and use tax, let's look on the right-hand table. The sales and use tax, first row in the right-hand table, and the baseline is 5.9% growth in the 2019 to 21 biennium. The optimistic scenario gets it to 5.2%. I think we have that backwards, sorry. But the pessimistic scenario is minus 4.9%. Okay. Another note, by the way, on the previous graph, the lower left-hand corner, it should all say individual income tax and not corporate income tax. I think it's clear from the title. The individual tax ranges from a baseline of 7.3% to 11.1% in the optimistic and 2.4% in the pessimistic. That's a pretty strong range, right? I think you'll agree. It amounts to, what, $80 million. corporate tax is pretty significant as well because it's sensitive to small perturbations from plus 20% to minus 14% around the baseline of 4.2%.
Right.
Preston?
Senator Cook.
Mr. Chairman, Jim, what does the $10 swing in the price of oil do to the well completed well number?
The technically, in our scenario, we keep that the same. That's a scenario. So, and the way you would think about that is if the constraint is from a labor force constraint, the desired well completion rate is higher, and so it's not affected. So the higher oil price either increases the desired completion rate or lower oil price decreases it, but we're assuming both of those numbers are higher than the 80. It's a simple scenario. It shows the show the role of oil prices itself in the model. So a more complicated scenario would say, okay, let's in a $10 less oil price, you might have desired well completions going below 80. We did not simulate that, but we could.
Continue, please.
I guess I wouldn't argue with that a $10 swing up or down isn't going to change the completed well count. But we've seen a much larger swing in a $10 not that many years ago, and it had a tremendous amount on the completed well count.
Right. $10 itself is arbitrary. And again, the idea of building these models is to be able to do scenarios like that, you know, either extreme or slight, and see the sensitivity. So we'd be glad to do that. So that was the end of my prepared text. Any other questions?
Okay, are there any other questions for Jim? Representative Mott.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jim, I was just doing some digging because I know you mentioned that you think that it's in your models that you believe that the single sales factor, that those effects have already been realized?
No. Let me phrase it this way. The negative effect they have on the growth rate, there has already been a negative effect on the growth rate.
Right.
That negative effect will continue.
Okay.
So they haven't been realized, but the difference between in growth rates will result in higher losses in the future.
Okay. Because if I'm looking at your optimistic and, I mean, if your scenarios on the last page, your corporate income tax, your baseline collections, your assumptions are about $194 million.
Right.
And Alan, I was just asking Alan here because I remember hearing this last week from OMB, and I couldn't remember the number, and I believe their projections, OMB's projections that they gave to government finance last week were $95 million for the 19-21 biennium. And that's a really big delta. I mean, the $100 million difference between your models and what OMB presented to government finance last week is a really big change.
I was telling Emily before that we need to go over some that in more detail.
Okay. All right.
By all means, no, first of all, I didn't realize they were that low, and I'm not sure where that comes from, but I definitely think that's a sensitivity issue.
I mean, I appreciate if you look at that
and
touch base with OMB. I mean, obviously, Emily, OMB, tax department, and I mean, I understand that your model should be at least a little bit different than some of the other agencies, but I
corporate
imagine
taxes are a volatile beast,
right.
But I absolutely take your point.
Right. Thank you.
Thanks for the tip.
That one's free, as are all the others.
Okay, I guess there are no other questions at this time, so thank you.
My pleasure.
Now we have on the agenda comments by interested persons. Are there any interested persons? Persons with interest? Okay, no one is leaping forward. So then we will continue distribution of information by Legislative Council staff. This one we received. Yeah. We had to fill out our agenda.
Say, Mr. Chairman, I would have.
Question for Jim. Yes, Representative Delzer has a question.
The question is, you know, you said something about having different scenarios. Is that something you'd be able to do pretty quickly, like in January, if we wanted those?
Oh, sure. Right.
Yeah, because I wouldn't necessarily want you to do them before then, but maybe in January we might want to be able to be the point where we could put different numbers in and see what the outcome is.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Thank you. I think we got this one.
Yep. Do you want to say a few words about them? Adam is saying a few words.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I can probably comment to the first two just very briefly, and then I'll let Alan maybe spend a little bit more time with the preliminary budget outlook one. But if you want to look at the general fund revenues monthly update, as well as the oil and gas tax revenues monthly update, these are just updates, the next version compared to what we had looked at last time. So not necessarily substantially different from what you've seen before, but again, ahead of forecast on both the general fund, looking at the ongoing tax and fee revenue collections, was ahead during the month of July, and so as a result, the biennium to date total about $87 million ahead. And then when you look at the transfers and other sources, brings the total general fund to about $88 million ahead of forecast for the biennium to date. And then on the oil side of things, again, ahead of forecast, maybe not quite as far ahead of forecast compared to the month of July. These are August numbers shown there. 65% of the ahead of the forecast for the month, or about $85 million ahead. And then for the buy-in to date, about $600 million ahead of the forecast. So you can see how that's causing the buckets to fill faster towards the bottom of the page, with the general fund now being completed, and as well as the other ones, and starting on the first $100 million of SIF at $14.2 million for the biennium to date. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I can turn it over to Alan, unless there are any other questions for me.
The members and Representative Carlson typically will make a comment about this. No one is renting their garments when the forecasts are well above, where the actuals are well above the forecasts. It's when they get under that they begin to rent their garments and become very unhappy. So far, so good on the basis of this legislative revenue forecast, and it's ahead. Therefore, your garments are safe for now. Alan.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just briefly on the budget outlook, we did do some updates to this from the last report that we gave you at the last meeting. And what we've incorporated into here on the revenue side is the OMB preliminary revenue forecast that was released, I believe it was last week. So if you'll note, for 2017-19, about the third and fourth numbers down, as Adam mentioned, to date we're $87 million ahead of the forecast. And then if you factor into that the additional revenues that OMB is projecting in their forecast, that would add another $49.5 million. So those are the only changes on 2017-19. If you move over to 2019-21, we changed the format a little bit. We were showing the base level ongoing revenues. Because before we had worked in a 3% revenue growth factor, we now are kind of breaking that out and showing the OMB preliminary forecast. So the base level is the $3,390,000, which is incorporating $300 million for oil versus the $400 million that was in 2017-19. That's why there's a $100 million difference there between the two bienniums. Then if you go down a couple numbers, the increase due to that was in the preliminary forecast that OMB had would be an increase of about $293 million. So if you compare that to our previous outlook, it is about almost $200 million more. Then moving down the page under the cost items, One change we made there, let's see, the fourth and fifth numbers from the bottom, higher education, we did include a factor for completed credits. There would actually be a reduction or a cost increase there of $4.4 million relating to the higher education formula because of completed credits. And then we did adjust the School of Medicine residency program because they will be receiving additional funding under the formula. There's a reduction now of about, or a cost increase of about $5.7 million due to the residency positions. On the back page, we did add an item right toward the bottom under 2019-21. We did receive a preliminary estimate on health insurance cost increases from PERS based on the renewal that they received from Sanford. Under that, premiums would increase from $1,241 a month to $1,446 per month. And that would cost the general fund about $36.5 million for that. So after all those adjustments, you can see now the shortfall for next biennium would be about $471 million. And again, we've got all those notes on the bottom that you need to be aware of about what's included, what's not included. I won't get into those again. But at the very bottom of the page, the Budget Stabilization Fund, due to the additional potential revenues for this biennium, the Budget Stabilization Fund balance now would have a balance of about $267 million to start next biennium, because anything over $65 million at the end of this biennium would flow into that. So, Mr. Chairman, that is a review, unless there are any questions.
Are there any questions of Alan? Senator Heckman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Alan, on the North Dakota School of Medicine, was there any consideration? I just saw an article in the paper where they've accepted 20-plus students from Arizona in there, and the tuition that they would generate. Was that considered in there, or do you know anything about that?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Heckman, that would not be included in here.
And then the other question is
that was law school.
Pardon?
That was law school.
Was it law school?
It was
law
school.
Okay, sorry. Okay, and then the legacy fund earnings are sitting at are estimated at 225. Is that a little bit low, do you think? Or?
Yeah, and Mr. Chairman and Senator Heckman, we do. That's one of the notes on the back that you know, potentially there could be more revenue there than what we've indicated, but that's the numbers that we've included. We kept it at $200 million for this biennium, and $225 million for next time.
So what's the actual sitting at right now? Do you know?
I believe to date they've had realized earnings of about $242 million. But again, that's, you know, it's volatile based on the stock
market. Right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But just to comment.
Senator Wardner and then Representative.
Just to comment on that, we were forecasting $400 million, and we already have obligated $200 of that. And what the number you're talking about is what we've realized actually up until this point, which is $240.
Right.
So we still got to fill to the 400 to meet the forecast. So just so that everybody understands, there will only be about 225, as it said, if it goes over, and it looks like it's going to go over, available to us.
Mr. Chairman, just to clarify, in our numbers, we only included 200 million. We did not include 400 million in as far as the forecast, because we were estimating what the original forecast was last session.
Well, then let me ask this. We did obligate $200 million this biennium.
Correct.
Out of that funding, correct?
Correct.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative Carlson.
Well, Mr. Chairman, when you look at the $470 million, and Alan, if you started to assign a number to A through I on the note of things that could that are not reflected, that's a really big number. I mean, we talk state employer salary increases, state school aid increases, because we know our student population is up quite a bit. Cost and caseload utilization. If you start adding multipliers to any of these, you pretty much get stuck adding it to all of them. So there are some really big numbers that are laying out there. And just remind me again on the legacy fund interest. We took $200 million for this biennium. Of that interest.
Correct.
Is there also 200 plugged in for the 1921 budget?
Mr. Chairman, President, we plugged in $225 million as an estimate for...
Well, and in my opinion, that was never meant to be a budget balancing item. It was meant to be a future fund for growth items, for things we wanted to do to help our state. And hopefully we can find a way to not become dependent on that, so it just automatically rolls that interest back in to our general fund, because I don't think it was ever intended for that. But my main point is those numbers that are sitting there, that A through I, are a significant amount of dollars if you attach a number to each one of those. So that 470 is a little bit not realistic, because those other things are going to happen in one way or the other. And I know the governor's called for a 10% reduction, I believe, in most of the agencies. Am I correct on that number?
Right, either a 5% or 10% reduction.
5% or 10%, depending on the size of the agency, I believe. No. So, and I don't believe that's reflected anywhere in these numbers, is it?
No.
Okay.
Representative Velzer.
Mr. Chairman, Alan, a question. Your $292 million increase for OMBs, what percentage is that?
I guess I don't have that percentage right offhand. Here, we can get it shortly.
Okay. And the other one that I would question is, you've got $50 million in here for increased property evaluations. And yet, in a lot of places, I think valuations might not be running that fast. Where did that come from? Where did you get that number from?
Mr. Chairman, that was information that was provided by the Department of Public Instruction and their estimate of the cost to continue for state school aid. And I believe they worked with the tax department on that. I'm not exactly sure on that, but
okay,
that was the impression we got.
So that's from DPI?
Right.
Okay, and the other one, if I may, I'd like to echo what Representative Carlson said about the legacy fund, is that we really need to work to the point where that is not touched until after it's realized there, because it could very easily end up not being there because of realized losses that we don't know about yet.
Mr. Chairman, Adam calculated the increase at the $297 million compared to the base level of the $3,390 would be, or the $293 million, I'm sorry, would be an 8.6% increase.
8.6, and we'd used 3 before.
Yeah.
Okay. Now that 8.6 is for the biennium, and your 3 was per year?
No, that was on the biennium.
That was on?
3
per year.
What? 3 per year. 3 per year, yeah.
Okay.
Increase in revenue.
Anything else? We have budget section coming up. We now need a motion for a report. Pardon?
A report of what?
We need someone to move, and seconded by someone and carried, that the Chairman and Legislative Council staff be requested to prepare a report and bill draft recommendations by the committee to present the report and recommended bill drafts to the legislative management.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just interrupt for one. Oh, we can finish that first.
Okay.
We have a roll call. Well,
okay. Pardon?
Mr. Just to clarify.
Just to clarify, do we have any bill drafts? Okay, no. I didn't think. I just wanted to make sure.
That's just boilerplate.
Figured just make sure that everyone knows there are no bill drafts.
No. Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Then we meet in motion to adjourn. Oh,
if
yes.
I could interrupt now.
Okay.
Sorry. Yeah, just for your information, it was part of the RFP that was IHS is doing the study of our forecast. Part of that, the requirement is for a final report from them. It's due by the end of the month. So when we get that, we will provide that to the committee and make that a part of the record. But they do have to the end of the month to get that. So just so you're aware that we will be providing that to the committee members when it's available.
Okay. Okay. Adam has another handout for you.
Lots of people with handouts. Not unusual in that.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, just for your information, we put this together late yesterday after we got some finalized numbers from IHS. So this just is for your convenience to provide the comparison between the numbers that OMB had released in their forecast last week and then the amounts that IHS presented today. So if you have any questions, you can let us know.
They're digesting it for a minute.
Huh? Where?
Okay, our final duty is to have someone make a motion that we adjourn. Sign it, aye. We have a motion, second. A second? Oh, okay. Now we had a bunch of seconds. To adjourn? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion carried. Alan, do we have time now? Yep, okay.